Welcome to the Raft Podcast, Let's Fix Things, where Chus and myself, Joe Fletcher, explore the world of connected experiences, spanning from connected services, platforms, and devices, over industries such as transportation, smart home, logistics, healthcare, and media. Chus and I started this podcast to explore design and strategy topics in more depth, coming from the projects we handle in our design consultancy. Now, on to the show.
Hey Joe, I bought a PlayStation VR.
What? I don't actually know that one. I did the Vive, I did the what was the other one? The Vive, the Verse, and then you put me in the Google Cardboard. But what is the VR one you put your phone into, or is that one that you is that a standalone headset?
It's a standalone headset for the PlayStation.
Okay, yeah. All right.
It's on pre-order, so it's not there yet, but I'm getting it this week.
This week, next week.
This week.
This week.
Yeah.
Are you going to bring it into the office?
Yeah, when I'm done with it. So
that, okay, so in 3 months. Awesome. Is it only for gaming?
They're showing off lots of movie capabilities, but yeah, at the moment it's for the PlayStation, and the PlayStation is a gaming console.
Have you watched a movie in VR yet? Like, I mean, because the movies don't move and your head moves. I just wonder if that's weird.
Yeah, I've watched a couple of the cardboard, the Google Cardboard movies.
Does it feel like you can't get away? Like you're like, I want to leave. I want to stop watching the movie. It just follows you.
Yeah. Well, you can look away from the action, but that's the weird thing. Like, you are the director of the movie and you never know how to make shots look great. So I'm really curious where that's going. But actually, the reason I bought it is because I want to practice for my interview with Lloyds Banking in a couple of weeks.
Well, I was going to go to ING. I think they're a little bit more innovative.
No, so this was in the news. Actually, today, Lloyds Banking is going to use VR goggles as part of their interviewing process. So they're going to have interview candidates wear the VR goggles to put them in a real-life working situation to judge their skills for real.
This brings up a unique topic here, is because I think so many times that when we see VR, or at least when I see it, and all the demos, we did CES last year and we had demo after demo after demo of VR, and it was games, it was roller coasters, it was painting, it was haunted house scenes, it was concerts, all these sort of entertainment aspects, so games and entertainment. But you're mentioning now that banking, a industry that is not known for being, let's say, tech advanced, tech savvy, really innovative in technology, is using this. I found out about a week ago or a week and a half ago, whatever it was now, one of my friends from Mexico, Cheka, if she's listening, visited me, and she was recently at a conference in Italy, and she works in the tile market. So those things that you step on and those things that go on the wall. And I didn't even know that tiles really had designers until she started working there. But this is big money, big business, because every house usually has tiles. You just don't think about it. But she was explaining to me that they use VR to see how tiles lay out in rooms. And again, an industry that you would never think of, like banking or the tile industry, being innovative, being tech savvy. And here are these guys actually finding real world uses for VR capabilities that are not just fun, but they have real application of, you know, on the job skills training. They have real application of, you know, architecture or home modeling. And I think all of us had these ideas of where it could go, but to see people actually do this, especially in industries that you wouldn't expect, is really, really cool.
Yeah. And I see like how 3D printing revolutionized model making, where making parts become almost as easy as making a CAD file. Of course, it had limitations in sizes and materials. VR can now take this place even over 3D printing, saying, okay, we will model this new car model in VR and we can walk around it before we do a single extra thing to it.
So I'm going to use a weird, I don't know if it's quite a non sequitur, but an unrelated thing is to discuss 3D printing and then VR, since you brought it up. 3D printing seems to have finally found its space as far as, you know, the sort of prototyping and quick use of materials. It's not replacing manufacturing. But the point is, when it burst onto the scene, everyone was super excited about, you know, oh, is it like manufacturing? Everyone can do things faster. Well, that's not really the case. And with VR, I feel there's also this misconception happening. And you can challenge me on 3D printing later. With VR, there's this weird misconception where people feel like we want to go back to Minority Report, where you're swinging your arms around freestyle, or in this case, you're holding controls. And when we did, so I worked on Surface at Microsoft, the original one, the really old one, the table, the touch stuff. And you learn very quickly that nobody likes to hold their hands out horizontally, their arms, because it's tiring. And I feel this idea, like you said, you can sketch a car in, you know, sort of a 3D space, but how many people want to do that? It's going to take an hour for you to sketch a car. And I think there are some great, great opportunities here, but I just do not see people working in VR, waving their hands around, their arms around for an entire day, unless we get to the point of Ready Player One, where they're in their amniotic fluid sac, suspended from the ceiling. And this to me is screaming for a better user experience design and design language that supports virtual reality.
Yeah, I think we're mixing two things now. I think experiencing things visually in VR is what it's for. And people will be able to experience a CAD model in 3D and walk around it.
Yes. Okay. Sorry. Good point. Good. I'd recently seen, I think it was Gravity Sketch that had videos of this guy sketching a car. So sorry, I got thrown off there. And that had been annoying me for a while because I felt like the guy's just not going to do that for 2 hours. It's going to get exhausting. But continue.
But it's like not everybody likes to make statues with a hammer and chisel, right? So not everybody's going to do Gravity Sketch. I think it's a way of seeing 3D models come to life that is much more realistic and allows you to judge much better what a shape is like.
Okay, so I 100% agree with that. And that also goes back to sort of the tile industry aspect, right?
Yeah.
So if I use an HTC Vive, I can walk around in a space. I can see what that space looks like. I can see, I mean, for architecture, or as you said, for cars, for spaces, I think there could be some genius applications here. I do wonder how soon or if ever we will see a common design language around VR controls. Because there's so many different ones going on. The Vive has the two hand controls.
Oculus actually just released the Oculus Touch controls. Yeah.
But is that like the Apple TV remote or what's that like?
No, it's exactly the same as what the Vive has. They basically give you two hand controls to use in VR.
Okay. Because Google, which we're going to talk about in a minute, released the, is it Daydream?
Yep.
Yeah. Released Daydream, and then they have sort of an Apple TV remote, Apple-esque TV thing with accelerometer, gyroscope. They just said sensors in what I saw on the video. But really gets sort of tilt and tilt control, speed control, these types of things.
Yeah.
And it's a one-handed remote for their new Daydream work, which is the phone and the visor. So I'm just, for me personally, being in the field of design, and thinking about, how do you design for these things? Are you designing, at this point, you're designing for a singular VR piece because you can't really design an experience that goes cross VR because each one has their own unique aspects. And I just wonder how soon, if ever, we're going to see convergence or if you're going to see one platform become very, very popular and then that will dictate to the others or it will just crush the others. This is a space I haven't thought enough a lot about from a strategic point of view.
Yeah, we've all seen how long it took for Apple and the other software brands to agree on how many buttons a mouse should have, right?
Yeah, on the flip side, iPhone came out and just sort of set the bar at those things. So maybe I guess it depends if VR, how fast it sort of moves up. And I'm very sort of curious and excited to try Daydream. I know we have more news. I don't know if we want to talk about anything else because I really want to get to our main topic because I think that's going to be a lot, which is the Google event, which I continually call I/O, which it is just not. It is made by Google. Okay. When I search for everything, it comes up with all the stuff from May. Yay me. So I think anyone who listens to this will already know Google had a big event. They released such devices. There did an Android update, I believe. Google Wi-Fi, Google Home, Google Assistant updates, Google Chromecast Ultra, and Google Pixel. Where do we want to start?
Yeah, let's start with
It's my favorite thing. I think it's a really cool thing. Strategically, I think that's one of the most interesting So I was hoping to save that till the end, but no, let's kick it off. It's our hot opener. Go, Goose.
Well, it is basically not an Amazon Echo. It is not a Siri. It's Google Home. It's a speaker that you put next to your TV in the living room.
Okay, so why do you say not?
Because they're not on the same level. They're trying to be something new.
Explain. Because I'm ready. I don't know if I'm ready to challenge this or agree with this. I'm going to see where you're going.
Well, all of these other voice assistants basically are either pure voice assistants, as the Amazon Alexa is, or they're on-device assistants, like on Siri is on the iPhone. But this one actually tries to bridge that gap by hooking into your TV using the Chromecast. It is bridging that gap. It is controlling your lights, it is controlling your TV, and it can control your thermostat.
Okay, so for that, I'm going to agree with that. Okay, one of us accidentally... I saw the light up. One of us accidentally accessed her. Our Amazon device came on. Okay, so I'm going to agree with what you said. I absolutely love the connections between Home and Chromecast. It drives me nuts that I cannot tell my Echo, my Amazon device, to put things on my Apple TV. I love that I can turn on my lights with it. I love that I can play music. I can set timers. I do a ton of wonderful things, but that integration is fundamentally missing. Since we don't live in the US, we can't order with it, but I'm sure if we could order with it, it would be an even richer.
Well, we can't even buy one yet, so yeah.
No, we have to go to Germany now to get one. Thank you for smuggling them in the country. But I love the integration. I love the fact that Google, similar to Amazon, is doing the processing in the cloud. It seems like Siri does all the processing locally, which drives me nuts because, as I've said before, Apple TV Siri is not the same as phone Siri, is not the same as Mac Siri. And I perceive that as a massive, massive strategy flaw.
And I even think that for the Google Home right now, that's almost what the killer feature is focused on. It's this kind of context that it keeps through a conversation, if you can call it a conversation.
No, I mean, what will be amazing to me, if I'm at home and I use Google Home and I say, hey, what time is tram 26 going to come? And it says it's coming in 6 minutes. And I'm like, okay, I got to run out of my house because the tram's across the street. And as I'm running out of the house, I grab my phone and I say, hey, Google, I'm trying to avoid saying the actual words. So when people get it, they don't trigger it. I say, hey, Google, did I miss the tram? And I asked Google Home about the tram number, 26, and I asked the phone about the tram, so it has that context awareness, which I know on a singular device it has. I don't know if it works across devices, and that would be amazing.
That's for us to find out. I'm also not sure.
Yes. So Google, I think for the most part, the design of Google Home, I really dig it. The design language they're going for, it seems to fit into sort of the material design aesthetic that they had been driving.
Yeah.
I do love the Amazon touch buttons on the top, so I don't know about the capacitive. I'm going to have to try that. I like the customization of it. For Google, who has traditionally had problems in the user experience space, they're great at putting out technology, but they're poor in fitting into people's lives. I think this is a great step. What I do worry about is they seem to focus again on the technology. And I feel like where Apple, who in the case of Siri, has a much lesser product, I would say, I feel like Apple does such a good job at marketing and communication in that and explaining how it fits into your lives and why you care about it. And Google just didn't nail that. I mean, they didn't even come close to really nailing that. And I feel like there are, it's not technology alone is not enough to save you. And they have a great product, and I worry that the way that they actually take that product and tell the story to fit into someone's life is not there yet. And I hope it comes because it is really nice from what I've seen.
Yeah, and I wonder, like, they went for a single product, right? Whereas Amazon has their three-product strategy, one that you take along, small little speakers, the dots that you put in every room, and then the big one that you put where you want to listen to music. But they make your smart home controls available in every room. If you want to put one in the toilet, it's possible, and it's not going to cost you twice as much.
But in theory, Google has that too, right? That's the phone. The phone is the tap.
Yeah. So I'm really curious if it's going to go for this single approach as this one entity that you're talking to that lives through all your devices.
I hope so. And by the way, I think the phone or AirPods is a better experience than the tap. The tap to me, because like the AirPods have a dual use, right? Their first use is a set of speakers for my ear. The phone's first use is for communication or games or, you know, whatever you primarily use it for. Let's say communication. The tap is just used for that. And I feel like that's because Amazon doesn't own any other hardware, they couldn't fit it in. And this is where Google and Apple both have a leg up. From a strategic point of view, I'll come to that when we go into Pixel.
Let's do that right now.
Well, I do love Google Home. You're going to kill me for doing this because you don't know I'm going to do it. But I have to say the music on the demo video I'm going to play this right now so everybody can hear this in case they haven't, but it was a little 1980s cheesy. And this will probably sound horrible coming over speakers, but that's okay. Introducing Google Home. You better not stop recording this. You know, it's got like that 70s sort of like soul singing in the background. Clean touchpad surface for total control. Far field voice recognition for hands-free use. I don't know who did the music because nothing else has that feeling to it. But the music just had me cracking up, and I could just hear this sort of Barry White voice in the background. Yeah, so I'm a huge fan of Google Home. I think where they're going strategically is great. As far as connecting all the devices, Google has been, you know, a wonderful in services. I do wonder how they make money on this.
Google is a service provider, right? What they are doing is making hardware so you consume their services.
But
it is unlike Apple, who makes hardware so you buy their hardware and makes extra hardware that replaces the old hardware.
But here's the problem. I don't see the service. Because Google makes their money on advertising. Like, I mean, yes, there are other revenue streams, but that is the main one. And if you use Google Assistant, whether that's on your home device or your phone, it's usually returning you one result. It's not giving you a search page of three ads and a list of other things. So I do wonder, from a strategy point of view, how they're planning on doing the revenue stream for that.
But it's getting all of the questions that you have when you're sitting on the couch, all of the questions that your kids have when they're sitting on the couch running around the house. It's the information that you're going to ask from this thing is a lot more intimate than the information that you would use to look up through a search with a keyboard.
Okay, so I totally agree with that. And I wonder how they're going to push that back to me in the form of ads, because that's, again, that's where they make money. I'm curious if they're going to try to pivot to a different strategy. That would be quite a big one, because it seems like ads is their bread and butter, and there's still quite a market for ads going on. But Pixel.
Yes.
I think Google Assistant is the killer here across everything. It's especially since it seems like everything is cloud processing and Google does this really well. Google Photos, Gmail, their services are usually great technology with a crappy user experience story put around it. In this case, I think it's the same. They didn't really make a great case for it, but because you and I both live in this sort of bleeding edge technology, we can see where it's going. And I get very, very excited. I did start using just some of the basic Google functions. We did try it on Allo.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, if they can get it to connect, it'll be absolutely awesome. And especially if the context works, if they can do stuff like, what was that movie I looked up a week ago? And I looked it up online on my computer. I didn't go into the assistant, but I looked it up online, which they should be able to do based on maybe an IP address or something. That to me, this was a true story. I got a Facebook advertisement for a suit store in Amsterdam. I really liked it. And then I closed it and I forgot what it was. And if I could say, what was that suit store? And I know this is through Facebook, right? But then I looked it up on Google because I don't like clicking Facebook ads.
And you looked it up while using Chrome.
Yes. Yeah. At that point, if I could say, what was that suit store that I looked up last week? Oh, if it returned me the I would be like, we're done here. Like, please take my money now.
Well, you can be sure it will do that at some point if it doesn't already do it.
Yeah. So Pixel, here's the first issue I have with Pixel. Apple has the crappier IA or sort of assistant feature functionality in Siri, but it has the right hardware, which is the AirPods. because I don't have to take my phone out. I don't even need my phone. And we talked about that a while ago, Apple doing this sort of cannibalization. They're letting the iPhone go. They're building new hardware products. To me, Apple has the right vision beyond anybody else. Google has the right services, but Google putting everything on a phone, I think a phone will be great for the next few years, and Apple's going to force everybody to move on. So this is where I think Google did a cheap presentation, in my opinion, to introduce an okay phone, followed up by a bunch of snarky comments that already put them in second place with really stupid phone color names. So that's why, after just saying how much I loved Google Assistant and Google Home, I think the phone just nothing. I'm going to stop talking. Say something.
Well, you have to keep in mind that it's the first phone that they're actually making themselves, or that they actually designed and then distributed and everything. It was assembled by HTC, but that's about the same level as Apple having their phones assembled by Foxconn. For the rest, the design and everything came from Google.
I don't think the design is that wonderful, frankly.
No, but I'm also talking about the hardware design, how the components are laid out inside of it. It's made up of components that are made by other manufacturers. So it's off-the-shelf products put together by Google into a new phone. It's their first step. So
where is Apple's already ahead of them?
Of course they are. But they don't have to be. Step two and a step three.
Where do I start on my anger? So much anger here. First off, trying to take all of Apple's presentation techniques and then railing on them for the unsightly camera bump. The one thing that I do think they got right, but they should have done it in a better presentation way, was the photos backup. I don't use iCloud on my phone because I never trust it. I don't trust Apple services. Even I have Apple Music and I still think it's okay at best. I was going to say shoddy, but it's a little bit better than shoddy. So I just don't think they had to sit there and make snarky remarks to Apple, because it puts them in second place already by doing that. It's you're taking shots at somebody who is driving a more futuristic view than you, and I don't think they need to do that. I think they could have established themselves as such a stronger, dominant player by not doing that.
It reminded me too much of the presidential debates. Just keep it classy, people. Come on.
And I really... The headphone jack thing, that you can see why Apple's doing it, because they're setting up for a multi-device ecosystem where your headphones can go back and forth between multiple devices. It's very smooth, and then you have Siri, and hopefully they'll get Siri connected on the back end, and then they'll string all those things together, and boom, right? Apple has such strong planning and dedication towards a roadmap and a future that is well put together, that it got to me when Google was like, a Pixel has a headphone jack. Like, fine. Okay, so what you've said is you're already behind. That doesn't bother me. I do think you're ahead with the cloud processing, right? Services Assistant. But for the rest of it, I just think it was cheap. And the colors felt like a bunch of people who had smoked too much weed and sat in a room. None of their other colors did that. None of the Daydream colors, the Google Home colors, none of those had weird, trying to be, facetious comedic names. They were just normal names. And
Yeah, but in the end, my projection for the future is still that phones are becoming interfaces to services. So whoever wins the services play will win the rest as well.
And I'll disagree. I'll say phones are going to go away. I say it will be replaced by either what's in your ear, that does limit your content discovery, or it's going to be replaced with a watch or some type of viewing device like in Her. But I don't believe phones are going to be sticking around like they are for...
Still, if you're working harder on your services, that's where you'll win.
Yes. We've said before that hardware at this point can be commoditized. Everybody can get the same chips, the same sensors, all this. Within reason, to the point that everyone can build very similar phones. And I do agree, it does become about the services. But when Google is coming out with Pixel, several years, what appears to me to be already with a step backwards, and Apple is taking a step forward, I think Apple can survive for a while longer with a crappier service. But they have to pick it up, obviously, or else they will.
I just wish Apple and Google would become friends again.
Maybe, because Android Wear is not going to be the same as the Apple Watch, same quality. But it does feel like it does feel like one of those things where you want them to merge, but you know they won't.
Well, let's continue because
Okay.
So many things at the same time.
Well, I doubt we're going to get through all of them. So what's
let's talk about the Wi-Fi, Google Wi-Fi.
Okay, good. I was going to say let's skip Chromecast. I mean that's really cool, but I don't think there's much to say there. I think it's great that it works with Google Home. Again, all these devices coming together. Google Wi-Fi. Actually, you know what? Before we get to Wi-Fi, because I think Wi-Fi can be the last thing that we really talk about. Was there anything else that you wanted to hit up?
The VR.
Oh, God, sorry. You know, okay, let's do VR first, because I want to hit up an important point about design language, and thinking about designing for these experiences. So let's hit up Daydream. And since I'm just already rambling, I love the design of it. I think they did something really right here with the cloth design and doing something that hasn't really been seen before. It doesn't necessarily fit in with material design, so I don't really know how those design languages are fitting together, although the Google Home, I think, has a textiled base on some of them.
Yeah, but I think it makes a lot of sense for this to be textile, because if you're thinking about the segment of the market that they're trying to hit, it's the low end of the market, right? You have the high end, which is the HTC Vive and the Oculus Rift. Then you have the mid market, which I'm getting on Thursday, the PlayStation VR. Total hardware cost of that is 1/3 of what an HTC Vive or an Oculus Rift would be if you buy the computer and everything you need to get that thing running. And then you have the low end of the market where they're like 79 euros. And the thing is made of fabric because you want to throw it in your bag and you want to take it along and you want to share it with friends. And it's this cheap kind of thing.
Tell me how I'm sharing it with friends now.
Not at the same time.
It would be cool if I could watch a movie and can obviously beam it to someone else's headset at the same time. So it was like a Chromecast. I imagine that feature is in the works. So that way we all can watch a movie immersively without having a TV.
Yeah.
And for places like Europe or the US where people have TVs, that's fine. But you know, a few years ago we did a lot of, Chris, you and I did a lot of research in India. Mm-hmm. And there are TVs, but a lot of people consume media, as in full movies, on their cell phone.
Yeah.
And you can imagine, you know, and people do this also. What was it called? It wasn't wasting time. What was the, where you just sit in your car, like if you're a driver and you're time waiting pass. For someone for hours?
They call it time pass.
Time pass.
Yeah.
So if you're a driver or if you're somebody who, you know, has downtime on their job, sticking on a VR headset, not having to hold your phone and just sort of vegging out in a car and consuming media in some way is to me a great opportunity. And, you know, I'm sure people at Reliance, who just launched over in India, Reliance 4G, Jio, I think.
Yep.
Yeah. I'm sure they're already thinking about it, but so make sure that as we're talking about things that you and I, and any of our listeners aren't just thinking about developed markets, but there's also tons of, you know, there's 1 billion people in India, there's 1 billion people in China, and there could be quite some use cases for these types of VR immersive experiences in those situations.
Yeah. And this one is just at the price point where you can just throw it in your bag and you're not going to need to buy the Google one. There's going to be cheaper ones as well. I own one that's a 20-year-old plastic version. The Daydream is also a certification for new phones that they have the correct sensors to render, to work with the minimum amount of lag so you don't get nauseous, that they have the correct amount of pixels and screen brightness and everything to say, okay, this is a good VR experience. And there's going to be a lot of phones that will support Daydream.
I also start to think about the, we've talked in the past to a new transportation and mobility experiences when there's self-driving cars. Well, you know, there's all sorts of experiences I can have with VR and self-driving cars. I mean, there's a lot of things that a low-end but well-designed VR headset can do, especially if it's with your phone and they nail that so you don't get sick. There's a pretty big use case. And as you said, it's if it's a fabric, you can throw it in your bag, you can take it with you. It's space efficient. And I do see obviously the connection if all of a sudden I can speak to it. So I can say, you know, hey, Google, play this movie on YouTube, and I get a hands-free experience through that. It becomes a very, very compelling case. And again, I start to see where all of these products, where Google has previously had this very, very poor collection of hardware that hasn't really connected well, I think this past event, they really brought it together. You really see that you have VR, you have the Chromecast, you have the Google Home, which connects to the Chromecast, you have the VR, which, you know, how soon until you use Google Assist? Google Assist ties all these products together. And then, of course, the one last thing is the Wi-Fi, which basically now is a replacement for Eero, poor Eero, which I love their devices. I thought they were beautiful. So this is meshed Wi-Fi. And they are basically enabling a system for you to really have a smart home, have a better viewing experience, have a more informed experience. And you said it before our broadcast, as you tie all these things together, picture if I'm a child and I'm lying on a sofa and I say, show me what a tiger looks like in my VR set, and I can see that. Or I ask Google Home, what does a tiger look like? And it shows it to me on my TV. For children, I think there could be a lot of educational and teaching aspects out there. So, you know, Bravo, with the exception of the Pixel phone, which I really dislike, for the reasons that I think it was just in poor form. I don't actually mind the phone that much, but I don't think it's going to go anywhere. The rest of it to me is great.
It's all of a sudden come from the Google service ecosystem to the Google hardware ecosystem as well. They became from a company that had services that you could access through other people's devices to a company that released their own devices. It's a big step.
So here's... And I don't think we're going to be able to talk about Google Wi-Fi unless there's a point, because there is something I want to get to that's, I would say, very important for designers. And a lot of times on this podcast, we talk about technology, we talk about sort of strategic implications, and every once in a while we do get to design aspects. But I think this is quite an important piece here, is that for any designer coming into this, they can think about what their device or what their piece of software looks like from an individual perspective. What I think is really great here, and as designers move up the chain and get to be more an executive presence or a director presence, it now starts to become thinking through all these different experiences. And it truly is, whether you call it service design for aspects, or whether you call it experience, like user experience design, which is, you know, quite different from UI design, where people get those confused. This language, you know, Google had Material Design, which was a screen-based language. I'm sure they have an internal name for the hardware design. And they have the Daydream headset, which is a fabric. I believe some of the bottoms of Google Home had a textile or fabric on them. You can put these products next to each other and they all have the same feeling. And then you get into the conversational aspects of design and you have to think through, well, how would someone address this? And this is where I disagree with the OK Google. I don't think that is a good way of addressing it. But from a design perspective, the complexity of ecosystems has moved up so much in the last 10 years, where it was, oh, there's an application. Okay, I'll design that application. Now to thinking, okay, maybe I'm the designer of an application, but I have to think through what my hardware looks like. And I have to talk to the hardware designers. And I have to think through what the voice UI looks like. And I have to talk to the voice designers. And for anyone who's a director level or executive level, they need to be thinking through all of these different individual products made by individual teams, but they come together under a common, and you can say design language. And I think a lot of people blow it off because it's like, oh, it's a design language, it's colors, it's shapes. But no, this is, as we stated earlier, if the hardware is becoming a commodity and anyone can create the hardware, the service is what differentiates you, the software is what differentiates you, the experience is what differentiates you. And this becomes such a critical part of the creation of these products.
And because it's a service, you're talking about something with a longer lifespan than any single product has. So the reason for keeping these kind of design languages intact is because people are going to have several touch points or several devices from your product package that are of different generations, and they all need to be able to work together.
Last week, we talked about the reintroduction of distribution. So you have all these different products being created one-off, and they're all being distributed so that products have individual uses. And we were discussing the need for service providers to probably pull them together, that their companies have gone away from service providers. And before, on this podcast, before I said service providers, I would say aggregators, because I think service providers conjures up a specific set of names in people's minds. And Google is a service provider, but they're not Comcast, they're not AT&T. But I do like the fact that soon I'll be able to go and almost buy a complete smart home with a lot of Google products in it, and I'll be able to buy Hue and it will just plug right in, and I'll be able to buy my August door locks or my Nest, obviously, yay, thermostat, and all these things come together. And you know, is Google going to come over AT&T, or Comcast or these other IoT players into the smart home, because unlike AT&T or Comcast or whoever else, Ziggo, Liberty Global, whoever else is out there doing this, they're going to be taking white labeled hardware and they're going to be taking, again, distributed products and bringing them together by merging the technology. And where Google and Apple and people like that come in is they really think about the entire experience. And again, from a design point of view, it is, for companies out there. And if I were a service provider, I would be getting some heavyweight designers on there real fast to really think through how to bring a bunch of your products together. We should do some maybe breakdowns or some discussions about design and how to think about that, some rules of engagement for that in the future. Because I think between VR language, voice language, chat language, hardware language, software language, there is a lot to think about.
There has never been this explosion of new input and output methods at the same time.
But holy crap, it's so cool.
Yeah.
I mean, you and I, I know you're on a different project. We got to do a project for a public bus line, mm-hmm. A private bus line. And you never realize how many touch points a bus line has until you actually go and do the research on it. And, you know, I feel like this is one of those things that people don't realize how many touch points hardware and software and services now have until you really dive into it. And it is such an exciting, difficult space to be in, but it is awesome.
Okay. I think we've run through all of the topics for this episode.
Yeah. How long did we run?
A little bit extra, but that's normal. So I can't call it extra anymore.
Yeah.
Let's talk about next week. So okay. Next week is episode number 20. And to celebrate, we're going to have a special guest. Her name is Lily Collet. She actually works at Raft. She's a designer. And she's going to be talking to us about the 5 lessons from industrial design for UXers.
So actually, quite a prominent topic, given that we were just talking about the connection between hardware and software design.
I know, exactly. And a welcome break from us talking about voice UI and VR. And
just yes. So that's actually nice. So next week, we do talk a little bit about design. And I think we can discuss a little bit, too, about other aspects of design besides the industrial, besides the software. I think there's it'll be a good show.
Yep. So,
cool. Well, good talking to you, man. And we'll talk more next week.
See you
later.